Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Naked Professors podcast. My name is Ben Bidwell and I'm here to bring you conversations that matter. With it being World Mental Health Month at the moment, I've really focused in on bringing some experts to either tell their stories or bring their expertise to help us all grow in a way that can help us be a better version of ourselves, if you like. Mental health can sometimes have a stigma, but for me, really, all these conversations are about allowing us to grow. So today I'm bringing Chloe Brotheridge to the table. Chloe's someone I've known for a long time. She's a beautiful soul, so calm. She has such a beautiful presence about her. And it's no surprise that we're talking today about inner calm, finding inner peace, because that's what she embodies. That's what I get from her every time I speak with her, and it's a really beautiful energy. But it wasn't always that way for Chloe, and she had her challenges. I saw often the coaches experience that kind of story, but in doing so she learned, and now she's in a position to help other people, and she's done so through writing her books and through her own podcast and through working as a hypnotherapist, which is the particular area that she specializes in. Today we're focusing on inner calm, inner peace. We're hearing a little bit about Chloe's story and then some of the techniques that she learns and she shares with her both for herself and with her clients. This is a really beautiful conversation for me. It was so interesting to hear that we started off talking about inner calm, and then it's so interesting to see where the conversation goes, given that inner calm is our quest. So I hope you really enjoy this. I found it fascinating and I really loved where the whole conversation went. Without further ado, introducing Chloe Brotheridge. Chloe, welcome. It's really, it's been a long time, and I love connecting with you. You've been traveling, we've had COVID, it's been ages, but I'm really grateful to have you here today and to reconnect and to talk about finding inner calm, which I think everyone will realise you embody as soon as you start speaking. So thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you for having me. I wonder if you were on my podcast and that was one of the last podcast I recorded before the pandemic. I don't know. I can't remember when it was, but yeah, it has been a while. So yeah, good to see you.
You know what? I'm so happy that we're here, because I loved our conversation on your podcast. It was really beautiful. And it's just really nice to find the right time to reunite us and do this again. So thank you so much for being here. You know, the reason I've got you on specifically at this time is because I don't even know if it's official, to be honest, and I've spoken about this enough times, but it feels like May is becoming the month for World Mental Health. And so we've had various experts on this month, and I really wanted to talk to you today about finding inner calm, as I say, because I know that's been your journey. I know that that was your mission, if you like. That was your journey into all this, is that you wanted to find your own calm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I would also say the journey continues. The search continues to some extent. I've definitely learned a lot about myself and how to manage anxiety that I had really quite badly for many years, starting as a teenager. And the journey continues. I think we're never there. We've never arrived. And in our modern world, there's always things that are going to be stressful and that are going to trigger us. And yeah, so I'm still on that journey, but I've certainly, yeah, learned a lot myself and get to help other people with anxiety and all the ways that can manifest itself.
So let's talk about that, because I'd love to know, like, what is inner calm on that basis? You know, because if you said that to me 10 years ago, I'm not sure I wouldn't really have known. Now I definitely do, and it's a big mission of mine as well. So I'd love to hear the different perspectives, understandings. I'd love to hear your understanding of what inner calm is and how it feels.
Yeah. So I suppose I think being calm is actually our natural state. I think when we feel that sense of groundedness and centeredness, for me, it feels like coming home. It feels like, yes, this is how I'm supposed to feel. I get that feeling very strongly. And I suppose when we're experiencing anxiety or stress, which so many of us are so much of the time, and actually often people don't realize, I don't know if this is the case for, I don't know, people listening or for yourself, we get so used to being full of adrenaline, on the go, close to burning out, feeling anxious, that we don't necessarily realize that there's a problem until something kind of snaps within us, or until, you know, things change for the worse, or, you know, life throws something in your direction. So I think part of it is sometimes we don't realize how stressed and anxious we are until we learn how to feel calmer, until we learn that there's another way of being. And I'm not going to sit here and say we should feel calm all the time, because I think stress has a place, anxiety has a place, all our emotions are valid. But learning to come back to yourself, learning to heal the things that are stopping you from feeling calm, and learning tools to calm your nervous system down, I think is something that we all need.
Mm. Yeah, well said. Well said. And you know what? I know you've been in Bali recently, and you're not in London now. You've come back to the UK. But I really feel everything you just said, especially in London. And I feel like almost society teaches us it's almost good to be stressed. It's almost, you know, we wear that busyness is a badge of honor, don't we? You know, it's I still hear it now when someone says, how are you? And I said, yeah, I'm really busy at the moment. And they go, oh, that's good. It's really good to be busy. Oh, what's the phrase I often hear? I can't remember what it is, but people often say it back to me. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, I can understand in theory it's good to be busy. But really, like, is busy like a, I know it's not an emotion, but is it a good energy to be filled with? Maybe sometimes, maybe, yeah, and it can be satisfying. But I do feel like the London energy is the opposite of calm, of peace. It's always, and it can present well. You know, if we're busy and we're running around and what have you done? I've done this and I've done that and da 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 da, well done, it's great. But how does it feel on the inside? And like you say, I believe that inner state, our inner state, our natural inner state is one of peace and tranquility. And perhaps there's almost some fear of that, because if we're peaceful and tranquil, then perhaps we're not doing enough. Perhaps we should be seen to be doing more. But I just feel that energy, society does not teach us this anymore. To be calm, to be tranquil is a healthy state. So I love what you've said.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. I remember, yeah, when you ask someone how they are in London, very often people will say that they're busy as the answer to how they are, when I don't think that's an answer, but it's almost like busy has become our, you know, default mode. But I think you're absolutely right in that we've got to think about how it feels. I know there are lots of people that say, I thrive, you know, when things are busy, I love doing lots of things. But there are other people, myself included, my nervous system doesn't cope very well with having loads of things and loads of overwhelming things and meeting after meeting after meeting and running from place to place. For me personally, that doesn't suit me. So I think we've got to listen to ourselves and what's right for us. And I think things are changing. I think I heard someone say recently, you know, busyness is being replaced by boundaries. You know, boundaries are all the rage now. We're starting to learn that boundaries are a thing and it's actually okay to say no. And I think we're starting to shift into that. But I think it's gonna take some time to get used to being able to say no and getting out of this mindset that our worth is defined by what we do and how productive we are. There's this sense that the more we do, the more we are. And instead, you know, can we focus on being rather than doing and come back to the things that really make us happy? And if that does make you happy to be doing lots of things, then that's great. But if it doesn't, you know, I hope we can, as a society, start to change things and learn that it's okay to relax. I've lost count of the number of people that I've heard saying, you know, I feel guilty for relaxing. I don't even relax on holiday. I can't watch Netflix without having one eye on my phone, looking at work emails or on Instagram, thinking that I've got to be trying to grow my Instagram following. And it's, we're never going to be satisfied if we're constantly, you know, if we can't enjoy our leisure time, then, you know, what can we enjoy? So I hope that our mindset can shift in that area.
And all of that resonates with me again. I think particularly for us who are individually, who aren't part of companies, that there's always more to do. There's always more to do. And I can't speak, I'm sure it's the same when you work for a company, that there's the same kind of feeling, or perhaps in a slightly different way. But I know from my perspective, particularly during this lockdown period, I'm living in my office effectively, because my flat is my office. And it's like, when do I ever stop? And there's part of me that, my ego, from in my language, that appreciates that ability to always have the to always be working effectively, because I've been programmed in to think that achievement is such an important thing. And it hasn't been good for my mental health in that sense over the last year. You know, I'm caught up constantly in work. I'm never really finding calm in that space, because I'm not able to really switch off in an office environment, because there's a voice that says to me, you shouldn't be watching TV now, you could be growing your Instagram, for example, which is a never-ending project. You know, there's no completion on that. There's loads of things like that. So can we dive into your journey, into how you've gone about, and as I totally hear you, and I'd be more worried if you said you'd completed it and inner calm is now achieved. But as you say, the journey is ongoing, because new challenges are always coming up. Perhaps we sometimes forget things to do that we know bring us calm, because we're just out of the habit. But I'd love to hear about your journey. How did you go about it? How did you start finding your calm?
Yeah, so I'll start at the beginning. As a teenager, I was very... I don't know if the right word is repressed. I didn't understand myself. I didn't know anything about emotions or thoughts or why we feel the way we do. And when I started having panic attacks at 15, it seemed to just come out of the blue. I didn't know why it was happening. And I had a panic attack so bad that I thought I was dying, begged my friend to take me to hospital, couldn't breathe. It was very dramatic, and it remains one of the most, you know, dramatic moments of my life. And after that point, I really felt like I couldn't trust myself. I couldn't trust my body. I could lose control at any time. And I didn't understand what was going on or why. And I remember going to speak to, I think it was something like the school nurse, who told me in a very patronizing way, you know, what have you got to worry about? Just don't panic. Just don't panic. And so I felt even less understood by that experience. And that kind of put me off, I think, asking for help. I think I just thought, no one, you know, this is a one-off incident. No one's ever had a panic attack except for me. No one's ever experienced this. No one understands. I've just got to live with it. And so it actually took me about 10 years before I went to see a therapist. And the kind of the trigger point for that was in my relationship at that time. I was 25. Anxiety was getting in the way of my relationship so much that we were going to break up. You know, anxiety is very hard for the person experiencing it. And it's also pretty hard for the partner of the person who is trying to support them or doesn't understand. Or, you know, I would do things like push him away, sabotage things. And it was all to do with the subconscious wounds and pain that I hadn't dealt with and that I had no idea about, because I'd never investigated or got to know myself. So I started at 25 to have therapy. I tried a lot of different things. I read a lot of different books. It did need to reach the point where I was like, I'm going to ruin my life if I don't sort myself out. So it had to reach that point of kind of, yeah, life ruining levels. And slowly but surely, I started to learn about myself. I started to realize, you know, you're not anxious for no reason. There's a reason that you're like this. And I looked into things to do with my upbringing, things to do with my mum and her anxiety and the trauma that she'd experienced that had gone down the generations and been passed on to me. And I started to realize, actually, when you learn about yourself, when you discover what your triggers are, when you realize actually there's a wound here that really needs to be healed. And if you can do some work to heal that, then the manifestations of that start to resolve themselves. So yeah, I went on this, I don't want to say healing journey, that's kind of a cheesy phrase, I don't normally say that, but mission to try to be calmer, to feel better about myself. And yeah, slowly but surely started to feel better and started to realize that we're not fixed. We're not, you know, static beings that just stay the same. There are things that we can do to help ourselves. And it took me a long time to realize that and to get that message. I think like a lot of people, I thought, oh, this is just the way I am. I'm always going to be like this, but it's just not the case. And so, yeah, I've done lots of things, lots of weird and wonderful retreats and trips to the Amazon to try to heal and meditation for hours and hours a day. And it's all been helpful. It's all been helpful. And I've learned a lot and get to help other people now who've experienced the same sort of things.
Oh, yeah, that's so beautiful. You know, it's really interesting. I've had Dr. Russell Kennedy. I don't know if you've come across him. He's American, but he recently wrote a book called Anxiety RX. And he talked a lot about similar kind of things. And really a big part of his healing journey was psychedelics and I think ayahuasca. And it's something I know very little about, but I'm exploring. And I think it's becoming a new topic and kind of a new avenue that for a long time was frowned upon and suddenly now is being viewed in a very different light. But there's a whole lot of other things that you said in there as well. And a big part of that, I think what I was kind of hearing in your conversation, which I totally feel is so true, is there's almost two aspects to anxiety. There's addressing what's happened to you in your past that's led you to traumas, which I know is an aggressive word, but also an understanding the events that can happen today that can trigger you back into experiencing fear or anxiety or however you want to phrase it, irregular body feelings, if you like, that can hinder the way that you show up in life, like you said, that can hinder your experiences and relationships, that can lead you to self-sabotage, that can lead you to come from not from a place of your authentic heart, in my language, not the truth of who you really are, but from a place that's acting from fear, really, from fight or flight. And so that there's a big two parts to that. It's learning, like we've had to in the last year, addressing something like COVID that suddenly presents all these new problems, but then also going within ourselves and understanding our journey and perhaps understanding why we talk to ourselves the way we do or why we get these physiological triggers inside of our body that lead us to feel uncomfortable. Can we talk a little bit about unpacking your journey and unpacking your story from childhood in terms of what sort of things did you experience? What sort of things did work that helped you? What did you try? What did you do? How did they help?
Yeah, sure. So you use the word trauma there. I think trauma can sound like a bit of a heavy word, but there are two types of trauma. Big T trauma, people that have experienced big traumatic events, abuse, being in a war zone, being in an accident. And then there are little T traumas. And little T traumas we've all experienced. And they are getting picked on at school, having your parents split up, being shouted at in front of the class, in front of all your friends, those everyday things that as children, very often, we interpret in a way that causes us to take on board a belief or give that situation some meaning that stays with us. Or maybe the body learns something from that experience that something isn't safe. And so we've all experienced these little T traumas, and I've been very lucky in my life. I've never experienced a big T trauma, but in terms of those little traumas, everyday things, having a mum who was very anxious, very stressed, going to a new school, a different school to the rest of my friends when I was 11, a new high school, because my parents couldn't afford to send me to the school that I was going to, that all my friends were going to, sorry. Those little things that, you know, maybe made me feel like I wasn't okay or I was an outsider. Those experiences that as an adult we can look back and see, you know, you weren't really an outsider, you know, you were okay. But at the time, the meaning that we create, the meaning that I created from those experiences was, I'm not okay, I'm something to be ashamed of, I don't belong. And those beliefs and those wounds were things that I've really had to work to heal. And a lot of that has been going back to those times in the past. And this is something I do often with people in hypnotherapy, Going back to little, 11-year-old Chloe, who was at this secondary school where she had a different accent to everyone. She was the only vegetarian in the school. She was the tallest girl in the school. And saying to her, you're okay. You know, this time in your life, it's going to pass so quickly and you're going to make friends and you're going to belong at some point. And actually, there are lots of people that love and accept you. So a process of healing the beliefs that were took on board at that time and reprogramming those negative patterns and beliefs that came from those experiences. That's been a big part of it. And in plant medicine, often in plant medicine, that's the sort of spontaneous process that often comes up for people. It's like you may never have had therapy, but you might find yourself going through that process of feeling pain from the past or communing with your past self and doing some healing work. And that's been one of the things that has really helped me. So yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest thing, kind of working with those past experiences and sending new positive beliefs and love to my past self. That's been really, really massive.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And, I can imagine to someone who would be, let's say, who's new to this could go, oh, come on, like, my inner child or whatever you want to call it doesn't need a hug. I can't hug it anyway. It's like all this stuff that happened in the past is gone. I've forgotten about it. It's like whatever. Like, I just need to pull myself together. I think for me, in putting it in simplest terms, is that if we don't address it, then that stuff, those small T's, I really like the way you explain that, small traumas that maybe didn't even feel traumatic at the time, we might even have just brushed them off as just being normal or kind of just whatever, part of the experience, but they create a narrative. They teach us to talk to ourselves in a certain way in our head, and how we talk to ourselves in our head creates energy in our body. And if we don't change the narrative that we create as a child, which is we are just a child, we don't have the emotional intelligence of an adult that can say, oh, that other child didn't mean to be horrible, they're just playing, or it doesn't, just because you're tall doesn't mean that anything else, it's a beautiful thing. But we as children, we're still learning and discovering and very innocent, and someone takes the piss out of us for being tall, so we can really hate being tall. And then we have that story that tall is bad, I hate being tall, until we actually go back and understand and find the compassion, as you say, to actually readdress that narrative is going to keep playing out. And if something happens around us being tall in any capacity, in the strangest of ways, we might have an automatic sort of self-defense mechanism that kicks off internally that says, oh, uncomfortable, danger, alert, like get out of this situation. And we have this constant self-talk in our head that says, oh, I've got even taller as I've got older, and now I'm even worse because I remember that moment. Or you don't even remember it in that time, but your body remembers that moment when being tall was really bad, and we keep playing it. So what we're talking about here and all that work you're saying is just with compassion, we're able to retune, change that story inside of our head that, what do we have, 50 to 60,000 thoughts a day or something like that, most of which are repeated day in, day out. And what we're trying to do in talking about this work is allow for that narrative to change so that we're not now just naturally, like unconsciously, without us even realizing it, creating these stories that don't serve us, that lead us to self-sabotage in our relationships or in our jobs or in any kind of things that we want to succeed in. And that's what I'm hearing. Does that fit in with your kind of perspective if we're trying to simplify this to an understanding level?
Definitely. And I think sometimes, there can be resistance to thinking about the past. We want to put a lid on it. We don't want to go there. It's hard work to think about it. But if you want to free yourself from getting triggered by stuff, if you're finding that you're having a strong emotional reaction to something and you're not sure why, or you're in a negative pattern of thinking about things, or you're depressed or anxious, there's very likely a reason for that. And very, very often there is something in the past that is at the root of that.
Yeah. And that's a really beautiful gift for us all to know. I love the quote that says, your wound is not your fault, but your healing is your responsibility. And I know that when we put the responsibility on people to heal, that's a big responsibility, and it's tough and it's not easy, and you can't click your fingers and say, I'm healed, and I'm going to be better tomorrow. It's a long process, like you just said, and often a process that we we don't want to go on because we've buried those feelings for good reason, because they're painful. They hurt us. We don't like to think about them. So it is easier just to not think about them, not bring them up, but they're constantly living inside of us in that place. And going back to this concept of calm, if we've got those triggers still undealt with, and I wish there was a word for something that had been given compassion, you know, it'd been compassioned, if you like, then, you know, it's going to continue to flare up. And calm is hard to find when our inner dialogue is making us wrong, or is in pain, or is talking nastily to us, is telling us that we're not good enough, we're not worthy, that we're too tall, we're too big, we're too small, we're too this, we're too that, we're too much. It's hard to find calm when that's the conversation that's going on in our heads. And that's what I hear you saying. And so how does your hypnotherapy work? Like, how does that tie into this? Can you tell us a little bit about how that fits in?
Yeah, so hypnotherapy has a bit of a weird reputation because people think about, I don't know, men in like wizards' capes snapping their fingers on a stage or something like that. But, you know, it's something that is extremely powerful, and we can see how powerful it is when we see the stage shows or the Derren Brown or that sort of thing. But when it's used in a therapeutic way, it's so, so helpful, because so often, well, we all know that, well, we've all heard the stat, it's something like 95% of our thoughts and feelings and our behaviours are subconscious. So we don't actually have a lot of conscious control. Anyone who's ever tried to think their way out of feeling anxious or just tell themselves to stop beating themselves up will know that it's pretty hard to do consciously. What hypnotherapy does is it helps us to access the subconscious mind. So where the automatic thoughts and the feelings and the behaviours are coming from. So when you're being hypnotised, you feel as though you're in a daydream. It's really relaxing. It's such a natural state of mind. Actually, we go into hypnotic states of mind several times a day before we wake up in the morning, before we go to sleep. Our brains will go through hypnotic states just before we're about to fall asleep. When we're zoned out in front of the TV, that's a hypnotic state. And so we can access this deep state to send some positive ideas to our subconscious, to tell ourselves something reassuring, give ourselves some compassion, give ourselves some love, and we're in a more receptive state to be able to receive it. Because when we're in hypnosis, the conscious mind really quietens down and the subconscious opens up. So it's really just a state of mind where we can make changes from more easily.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So simple when you put it like that. And I work, my first entry into doing work on myself was with a hypnotherapist. And at that point, because it was my first start, and I think my head was so strong, I was so stuck in my head. You know, I was trying to rationalize this. And without understanding you know, I just couldn't rationalize it. It was like, just, you're talking to me. And I think probably perhaps the whole, I want to say Michael McIntyre, but it's not Michael McIntyre, Paul McKenna. The whole Paul McKenna series that I remember used to watch ages ago, where people run around, like you said, and do crazy things and things like that. And that's what I thought hypnotherapy was. And so I kind of thought, perhaps if I start doing hypnotherapy, she's just going to, I'm going to do some weird stuff, and then bingo, I'm fixed. But even in just having this conversation now, there's more depth to understanding. And it really does make, even to my rational mind that's still alive, that's naturally within me, it really does make so much sense. It does make so much sense, when, especially when you say 95% of our behavior is buried in our subconscious, or does come from our subconscious. So we're not aware of these things. But yeah, talking to that, changing that narrative, like you say, with compassion. And Chloe, so many of these conversations that I have, it always comes back to just compassion being such a huge part of it. Because I think shame is when we carry that shame, when the rhetoric is that we're shameful, that I keep coming back to tall, because we're both tall, and I think I probably had that experience when I was a child as well. But you know, we're too tall, or gangly is something that comes to me. Then I've lost my trail of thought now. But yeah, just having compassion that it's not shameful to be that, and to understand, allow yourself to sink. Now we can actually talk about it. And I guess a huge thing for me now in having conversations like this is, when I can see someone really accepting their flaws and able to talk about, like you have done, some of the challenges that you faced in the past, it's a really beautiful sign for me that they're not carrying those negatively in their subconscious anymore. There's some acceptance through compassion. And with that, they're okay to talk about it. It's no longer a sort, it's no longer painful. It's just part of their story in the past. And there's much more freedom in that place. Not to say it doesn't still come up sometimes, like you said, you know, but there's less severity, there's less defensiveness around it. Now we've allowed it to come up, now we've allowed it to heal. And it's really beautiful. And I'm going off on a massive rant here, Chloe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, all good.
But what comes to me saying this is, when we do this work, you know, when you allow a hypnotherapist or someone like Chloe, in whatever aspect, however you work with them, whether it is using hypnotherapy or different aspects, you're just allowing them to be more of who they truly are, not who they learn to be. And that's freedom, and that's liberating, returning back to yourself. It's a really beautiful journey. And I remember having the feeling of sitting with you the first time we did this, and just feeling like having that authentic connection of just, you know, really talking to someone who's done the work. And it's beautiful for us all to do. Yeah, I don't know. there's no question to this, but I just, that's what intuitively was sitting inside of me as you shared all that. It's a beautiful journey to go and do this work. Can you tell me a little bit more about this? What benefits have you gained in your space now in having understanding and letting go of the wounds and some of the small T's that you experienced, to now being Chloe, who can still have face challenges, but can sit with more inner calm inside of her? What do you have in that space?
It's interesting, you know, talking about shame, that was something that affected me massively. I remember when I first started having therapy, having to talk about myself, having to tell this stranger things about myself that I felt so ashamed about. I remember clawing at my jeans and my legs, like through my jeans, like I was so uncomfortable. It was like I wanted to rip my skin off. It was absolutely excruciating. And that's what shame does to us. It makes us believe that we're not okay, that we're bad, that we're, you know, if someone knows what I'm really like, then they're going to be horrified. That's what shame tells us. And what I've learned so much through the healing that I've done, and also the kind of the group work that I've done with people, is that and I know Brené Brown has this famous quote, shame can't survive being spoken. When we are open about it, when we say it out loud, and we're met with acceptance, and we're met with someone saying, I felt exactly the same as that as well, it's so healing. And it's almost like the shame just dissolves in the light of us bringing it up to the light, showing it some love, having other people witness it. I don't think the shame can survive in that situation. And a massive thing that I've noticed has been people needing to know that they're not alone with what they're experiencing. And knowing that other people feel the same is one of the most healing things, I think. We all just want to know that we're not the only one. But so much of things to do with our mental health, I think anxiety and depression particularly, part of the anxiety and depression is telling you you're the only one that feels like this. And also you're never going to change. You're going to feel like this forever. And I remember when I first started doing talks in public and group talks in front of groups of people, being able to, you know, it was a massive healing thing for me to share about the anxiety that I'd experienced and have people say I felt the same. That was really healing. And the people listening, hearing that I'd felt the same and other people sharing, you know, was a massive thing. So sharing about things is really important. I think being, you know, being kind to yourself, because it's easy to think, I should have this sorted by now, or, oh, I thought I'd made this progress. Because recently I had an experience where, oh, I thought I'd left that feeling behind. Oh, I'm having this feeling of like being in Bali, meeting new people, wondering if I'm going to be accepted, you know, making new friends, the kind of vulnerability of texting someone and saying, do you want to go for a coffee? And I noticed those feelings coming up again of, oh, you know, am I going to fit in with this group of people? Am I okay? And really recognizing that as it came up was so powerful for me, and being like, right, now is the moment to be kind to yourself, to hold yourself through this experience, and to remind yourself it's okay to feel this, you're human. And someone once described it to me once as like healing's like a spiral. And you might be spiraling up, but you might have thought you've got over your feelings of shame, but then you spiral around again and you realize on another level you're experiencing it again. And it doesn't mean that you're going backwards, and it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you if you feel like you've taken a step back, but that's part of the healing spiral. So yeah, that's an experience I had recently about that.
Totally. I don't think that the fears are still going to be there. The story is still going to be there, but it's just our ability to handle it differently now. Like, again, with compassion rather than, oh my God, there's something wrong with me, alert. Like, oh my God, I'm about to be rejected, or I'm going to fail, or I'm embarrass myself, or I'm not, no longer welcome, or whatever it is. It's actually now, oh, hey, there's that inner child of mine that's a bit scared of this situation because of that time when I was seven, when I experienced that thing. And actually, it's okay. So I it's interesting that came up, but I know it's not going to define me in this moment, and I don't need to play with it or embody that anymore. I can just let it be. And that's now we've just shown ourselves there in that moment. We've grown, I think. And so what, having this understanding, and, you know, obviously the journey is still ongoing and the work continues and the challenges still come up. But what does it allow you to be, Chloe, now? Who you weren't able to be when you were 25, let's say, when you're going through difficulties and you hadn't an understanding, you thought this was only happening to you. Why bother like, it's easier just to bury this stuff and never have to deal with it. What have you gained in doing this work? That's what I'd love to know.
Yeah, such a good question. So what I've noticed is, well, one thing in my family that people like to do is to sweep stuff under the carpet and not deal with it, not talk about it. And when you do that, resentment builds up and things don't get sorted, things stagnate. So for me, having an attitude of, we talk about everything, like in my relationship, we talk about everything, nothing gets swept under the carpet, nothing gets ignored. No conversation is out of limits. And in my friendships as well, I think being able to connect with people so much more deeply because we have open conversations with each other. And those might be awkward conversations. They might feel embarrassing or vulnerable, but, you know, having a commitment for me to have those sorts of conversations. And a big thing for me has been living the sort of life that I want to live. I remember feeling like my world was very small before. Everything was scary. And I held myself back from doing things. I couldn't, you know, I would get nervous meeting a person one-on-one, let alone talking to, you know, hundreds of people on a stage. And being able to overcome some of those fears and learning to know that it's okay to feel afraid. It's okay to have a lot of nervous feelings in your body and still do it, has meant that my world has opened up so much, and I've been able to have so many different experiences and do the work that I do. And it's expanded my world in a lot of ways and deepened my relationships. I think those would be the two that come to mind for me.
Yeah, and they'd be really similar for me too, actually. And it's really beautiful. I was just thinking as I was listening, I'm really grateful to have this conversation, and to feel like we're really just making things really simple in that respect, which you have a beautiful ability to do, by the way. And so, like, just to expand on what you just said, for me, relationships are everything now. And 10 years ago, relationships, well, maybe 15 years ago, relationships weren't everything. They were everything to my heart still. Deep down, they were really what they really made me feel alive. They were really beautiful. They're incredible. But other things became priorities ahead of them. You know, as quick wins, you know, the instant gratification things were much easier and much more accessible, and I could just buy them and get them pretty quickly as and when I needed to. And relationships were kind of, yeah, they were good, but they never seemed to quite fit into all of my terms, and so I'd have to make sacrifices, and the benefits were never quite outweigh just going to the party and having fun every weekend instead. That was a much easier option. What I've learned now is that relationships and feeling deeply connected to people is the most beautiful of gifts, the most powerful internal and long-lasting energy that we can have inside of us. And with that space, with that feeling, with that connection, we're much less in need of the quick fixes, because we realize that they're not the be-all and end-all. They're not where my happiness resides. They're just what they are, like bits of fun. And I'm not saying never go and have any fun, or never go and do things that go to the party or whatever. But for me, my work on is much more about allowing the deep connections into my life, including with myself, you know, as well as other people, really knowing myself, knowing my values, aligning with my values, being true to who I am, feeling integral, feeling aligned. Then from that space, feeling good, I go and enjoy experiences on top, but knowing I don't need them. And invariably I make that choice less, because they're no longer as much of a priority. But that sense of opening up in really simple form, what I'm trying to say is that it's very hard to build deep connections if we don't show ourselves, if we don't express from a deeper place. You know, I don't build a deep connection with someone when I talk to them about football. I build some kind of connection, you know, that we can converse and we can feel, but we're not going beneath the surface, you know. And I never really would have understood that term, beneath the surface, before. But now, in conversations like this, they really come alive. Beneath the surface is allowing yourself to be seen more deeply, allowing yourself to share your anxieties, to share what's troubling you, to share what the voice inside of your head is talking about, even to share why that voice in the head is talking to you like it did, because I remember it's taking me back into this past experience of feeling like this, and allowing people to understand you a little bit. When we understand each other, there's more depth to our connection. And this, to me, is like almost a forgotten part of the human experience. We are wired for connection, but we live in a world that just says, go and consume. Go to the shops, go and buy stuff, go and get a new car instead, or get the bigger house and all that stuff. That's what we're shown everywhere. Never do we get a message anywhere saying, open yourself up, be more vulnerable, allow people to see you more deeply, form deeper relationships, and you'll feel better internally. I mean, if that was an advert on TV, people would switch channel generally. But that's the truth for me. That's what I truly believe.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking as you were speaking, I was thinking about this experience that I had a year and a half ago, just before the pandemic, of going to Brazil to stay with a tribe in the Amazon for a couple of weeks. And so just look at the way they live, where their whole lives are dancing, singing, drinking ayahuasca, sitting by the fire, saying prayers. The children, we never saw a child cry. There were children running around, you know, all day and night, never crying, never having a tantrum, anything like that. And those really simple things that are what give us a lot of joy and happiness, connection, being with each other, singing and dancing and praying and, talking around the campfire, those are the things that really nourish us. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to see people again and have those sorts of experiences again with things hopefully opening up. And yeah, that's what I was thinking as you were speaking.
Such a beautiful example, Chloe. Such a beautiful example. The thing that strikes me when you say that is that stuff in today's world, especially for me sitting here in London, that stuff takes vulnerability. That stuff takes being seen, you know, sitting around, talking about things, dancing, expressing ourselves. It takes vulnerability. And in London, we generally have to drink 10 pints as a man to do that, you know, or whatever it is. Take something that allows us to let go of the voice in our head that says, oh, no, embarrassing or awkward or difficult, or I don't do this, or whatever the story is. And actually, you know, this is when we take all that conditioning away, like you just said, when we're naturally in that environment that you just explained in the Amazon, that's what we love to do as humans. It's that's how we're wired. It's beautiful. It's free. It's connection. It's self-expression. It's creativity. It's flow. And it feels a long way from how I live in London, you know. It's a beautiful example. Thank you for sharing that. How do you aim to bring that alive in your life now? Is that part of your finding calm? You know, dancing around a fireplace, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I try to, well, obviously before the pandemic, we'll go to different things like singing circles or ceremonies. There's lots of different ceremonies taking place in the UK. Hopefully there will be this summer where, yeah, people are getting together, sitting around the fire, singing songs, praying, or, yeah, having experiences with plant medicines. And, yeah, that is quite a big part of my life, I would say. And, always come away from those experiences feeling like, This is what life's about. This is it. This is the most important thing, to be able to connect back and have those experiences. And I've always felt so nourished and, yeah, connected. And like, I can't describe it. The feeling is, for me, like, I don't know if people aren't necessarily that spiritual listening to this, but like a sacredness feeling of, it's like that feeling when you've been out in a forest or you've been swimming in the ocean and you're like, wow, isn't nature amazing? It's kind of like this, I would describe it for me as sacredness. And for me, I get that feeling from connecting with people and being in those spaces of real sacredness that I can then bring into the rest of my life, that just adds a richness to things that a lot of other experiences don't deliver on, don't give me.
I love that sense of sacredness, you know, and it reminds me, it almost feels like it's really interesting, the journey this conversation has been on in itself, because we talked about finding inner calm. And of course, you know, perhaps a corporate world would say, right, give us specific things, this, 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 and this that can fix our inner calm. But it's almost like, it's just like, okay, it might not be physical medicine, but it's almost like, give me a plaster for that and a plaster for that and a plaster for that that can just help me in that moment. But if we're going deeper, it feels like we've gone onto this, it's understanding innately who we are as a human being and what our needs are. And those needs, for me, and this is going to sound a little, and I don't mean to make anyone wrong, but our needs as human beings go beneath what we're shown in society. And the things that you're talking about now, some people might go, that's just weird and it's not me. And I would argue that it is them. It's just the stories that they've tell themselves that makes themselves rebel against them. You know, I always thought, I'm not a dancer. I was like, no, I don't like dancing. I remember we used to kind of judge people looking at the dancing, going, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And it was really just because it was fear for me. It was just fear that I wasn't good at it and I would make up stories that it wasn't a good thing. But put me in the kitchen in a song that I love and there's no one around, my body naturally wants to bop away, you know, when I'm free from judgment, I'm free just to be myself. So I had to really sink into that acceptance and be like, no, this is turning to the deeper perceptions of who I really am as a human being, is that I have a body that loves to move and loves music. And when I'm in deep conversations, I love to let myself be seen and create and express how I feel, and for people to see me, the truth of who I am, not who I'm pretending to be. All these things are what nourish me, this sacredness, as you said. say that make me feel more complete as a human being, more settled, more calm, more peaceful, more aligned. All these words that are just so important, so important. And I'm really grateful for you for showing, reminding me of that, because you explain it in just a beautiful way.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And it feels like that's a natural point. It feels like we've completed a circle, but is there anything else that you'd like to add to this? Because we started to talk about inner peace and inner calm, but we've ended up talking about dancing around fire pits in the Amazon. And I don't think you necessarily would have made that straight line at the beginning as a listener, but that's where we found ourselves. But is there anything else you'd want to add to in everything that you shared today?
I suppose, as you said before, there can be a combination of getting to the root of things and healing where those triggers come from, and then having those practical tools and things in your life that are going to help you in the day to day. And I think it absolutely is a combination of the two. We need, I think, to have those practical tools in place to counteract the fact that we're living in a life that we weren't evolved to live in. So having, you know, journaling your thoughts or meditating, getting outside in nature, walking, talking to people. So yeah, I think it can absolutely be a combination of those two things, and they're both really important. So yeah, that's the final thing I would say, I think.
Beautiful. Thank you, Chloe. And do you know what? I'm going to add that if you want to accelerate that process, if you're like, I'm interested in this, and actually I've heard things today that I haven't really thought about in that way before, and they do kind of, as much as I almost hate to admit it, they do kind of intrigue me in some capacity. Maybe I'm not exploring all of who I can be. We've both done something called the Hoffman process, which experiences like that really put you in an environment for a week where you just go on an investigative journey into yourself to learn. And things like that can really accelerate the process, if you like. You know, you can do that stuff in a week that you could be spending a couple of years in trying to learn about yourself. So it might sound scary or foreign, but jumping into experiences like that, or Chloe, I don't know, do you host any retreats or anything like that? Have you got anything like that?
I don't host retreats, but I do different online courses and online group experiences that I run with people, where we do a lot of healing things at the root and connecting together and sharing and that sort of thing. So,
jump in if these things interest you, then that's where it started for me, working with a coach. So yeah, dive into these things and see what comes out of it. And that's what I feel like sharing, because I think you've really expressed things really beautifully today, Chloe, and just taking us all into a little introspective journey and reminding ourselves what matters and how that's important in finding inner calm. And also reminding everyone that inner calm is possible for us all. It is our natural state, and you're not bad or wrong for how you feel, and you're not on your own. But we've all had challenges. And you're just experiencing perhaps some big T's or some little T's that are unresolved, and you can resolve them. You can find that space of calm again. It is all possible, and that's what you've reminded me of today again, Chloe. So just thank you so much. Thank you for everything you shared, and thank you for sitting in the space with me.
Thank you. Thank you for amazing questions. Great to speak to you.
Oh, I love that conversation. It's a real honour and privilege for me to sit in spaces like this and allow these conversations to flow. Chloe brings such a calmness, such a simplicity to this journey that I really hoped helped. It's interesting actually for me to sit in the space, because I heard a lot of what we've heard throughout this month actually in similar ways, but everyone brings their own version to it. So I hope that brought a lot for you, and I hope it made you question how inner calm, inner peace can exist for you. Are you living truly in tune with your values, or are you being pulled by the values that society teaches you? And did you ever associate that with finding calm? Really interesting, because it's been a massive part of my journey for sure, is aligning for truly with my deepest values, and those deepest values were certainly different to what society taught me. So yeah, really grateful to bring that conversation alive, and looking forward to doing a bit of booging. Whether I'll make it to the Amazon, I don't know, but booging wherever I can. I'm working it on the kitchen at the moment, so that will have to do. But yes, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. If these conversations do help you,
you enjoyed them, please feel free to share them in any capacity. If you do share on socials, I'm always so grateful to see that you have done. It's really beautiful for me to know that the conversation's impacted people, so please tag me in. And if you want to rate, review or subscribe or follow, whatever your button says, then that would be amazing. We'd really love actually more in reviews. That would be incredibly helpful and beautiful to see. So any help you can offer will be amazing if you have enjoyed this. If you haven't, thank you for listening anyway. And feel free to join us anytime you want if you think that there's potential in what we're sharing. Thank you so much for joining us. Sending lots of love. Enjoy. Well, I hope there's some sunshine. Enjoy the sunshine. And I'll see you, I hope, next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.